Sidney Morgan Besser was a brilliant philosopher renowned for his sharp sense of humor. Raised on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, his accent and mannerisms made it clear he was a New York Jew. And Morgan Besser was a proud Jew. David Schatz, in his eulogy, relates that Morgan Besser would chastise Jewish academics who hid their identity. When asked by a colleague, "What do you love?" Morgan Besser responded, "The Jewish people." Once he was attending a lecture by a British linguist about double negatives, e.g., "I don't disagree," effectively means, "I agree." The lecturer confidently declared that, although in most languages a double negative is a positive, in no language does a double positive become a negative. From the back of the room, Morgan Besser called out, "Yeah, yeah." Morgan Besser's witty response is deeply Jewish, and the Jewish appreciation for sarcasm and irony begins with the Book of Esther. Irony is woven into the plot of the Book of Esther. The same ring, scribes, and letters used by Haman are then given to Mordecai. The same rushing courtiers carry letters that say to kill the Jews, and then other letters to kill their enemies. Haman descends from being a powerful minister to whom all must bow, to being a groveling supplicant who throws himself at Esther's feet. The tree Haman erects to hang Mordecai is used to hang Haman. Mordecai goes from sackcloth to royal garments. There are endless reversals in the book, all leading to the same point. The Jews go from life to death, from extreme vulnerability to safety. Plot reversals are not merely the literary structure, it is the book's theme. The Book of Esther states this directly. On the day that the enemies of the Jews had planned to overpower them, it was reversed, and the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. This reversal becomes emblematic of Purim, which is celebrated during the month which transformed for them from sorrow to joy and from mourning to a holiday. The Hebrew word used in both verses, hapash, literally means to flip something over. The Purim story does exactly that. And this theme of ironic reversals is the key to understanding the Book of Esther. God's name is not mentioned in the Book of Esther. This is puzzling. Why would a sacred biblical book omit God? It is here where one must return to the theme of irony. The reversals in the Book of Esther are too many to be a coincidence. God may not be mentioned directly, but he is clearly behind the scenes, ensuring a turnaround that is truly measure for measure. In the Book of Esther, God speaks to us through the divine irony. The discerning reader can see God's fingerprints everywhere in this story. That still begs the question, why doesn't God appear directly to Mordecai and Esther, and offer them direction? Because God is hiding. Beginning with the Talmud, many interpreters have pointed out that the Book of Esther tells us of events that occur during a period of Hester Panem, when God withdraws from sight. To find God in times like these, one must look for him in hints and coincidences, like the remarkable reversals of the Book of Esther. God slowly disappears throughout the Tanakh. At first, he is speaking directly to Moses, face to face. By the time God communicates with the prophets, they see him through a dull-looking glass, and only can hear a small, still voice. Later prophets get divine messages in visual parables, where the message is unclear. Finally, God stands behind the curtain in the Book of Esther. And then the Tanakh ends. The Book of Esther is God's final stop in the Tanakh, and is meant as the guidebook for when God disappears from the stage. It teaches us that in times of Hester Panem, we need to hold tight to our faith, as Mordecai and Esther did. We need to search for the God of the gaps, the unique moments when we can hear God's whisper. The Book of Esther also teaches a second lesson, one that complements the first. We must always ridicule Haman's pomposity. Haman struts about, certain of his power and influence. When the king asks him for advice on how to honor someone, Haman assumes it is for himself, thinking, "Who is there that the king would rather honor than me?" It turns out the honor is for his hated rival, Mordecai. When Esther invites Haman to a meal where she will sabotage him, Haman proudly declares to his wife, "Queen Esther invited no one but me to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared. And tomorrow I am again invited by her, along with the king." The reader can only chuckle at Haman's silly pretensions. The Book of Esther knows that when God hides his face, false idols will claim the stage. Haman's will demand that we kneel and bow low. They will be popular and have many followers, but like Mordecai, we must resist them. Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner explains that idol worship is built on hype. Through peer pressure and falsehood, pagans are induced to accept false idols. That is why the Talmud specifies that one should mock, even in a crude way, idolatry. The very essence of idol worship is hype, which can best be punctured by mockery. And that is the second lesson of the Book of Esther: mock false idols. The Jewish love for sarcasm begins here, with the Book of Esther. We know there is always a new movement explaining to us why we should acquiesce to our own suicide. There are always indoctrination campaigns proclaiming that the false idols are true gods. There is always a Haman, demanding to be taken seriously. Since October 7, we have seen an unprecedented Hamas-led propaganda campaign against Jews and the Jewish state. The depraved rapes of October 7 were denied by so-called peace activists. Women's groups remained silent. It took the United Nations months to finally say something. Others dismissed the horrors of the day, condoning the evil of Hamas by saying it is understandable resistance. The cruel murders of the Bibas family were whitewashed with lies. Lovers of peace have chanted, "Ceasefire now," demanding that Israel stop fighting. It makes no difference to them that at any point in the last 18 months, Hamas could have ended the war at any time by surrendering the hostages and putting down their weapons. The one group that governs Gaza refuses to consider the welfare of its own citizens. On the contrary, Hamas sees the deaths of Palestinians as politically expedient, a way of putting pressure on Israel. But no one chants anti-Hamas slogans on college campuses, demanding Hamas to release the hostages now. Holocaust inversion has become the norm. Israel was brought to the International Criminal Court on the charge of genocide for the crime of waging a defensive war. Never mind that the population of Gaza has actually grown, the very opposite of genocide. These critics ignore that civilian deaths, as painful as they are part of war, and Israel's record in Gaza is better than that of U.S. military actions in Mosul or Afghanistan. Holocaust inversion turns the Jewish state into the new Nazis, and paints the Jewish community as collaborators in genocide. This stokes intense anti-Semitism. Jews are being told that they must criticize Israel, or at least stay silent, or they will be forced out of social groups. They are told by experts, all of whom hate Israel, that Zionism has nothing to do with Judaism, as if the Tanakh and Jewish history never happened. Protesters and propagandists are slandering Jews and the Jewish state. Sadly, this is nothing new. And like our ancestors before us, we need to mock these absurd accusations and say, Yeah, Rabbi Chaim Steinmetz is the senior rabbi of Congregation Kehilath Jeshurun in New York.